This is episode 56 of the Fifth Estate Podcast. Dave Marcus, smoke 'em if you've got 'em. Your luggage shouldn't cost more than your plane ticket. Away Travel's luggage is designed with the highest quality materials and still under $300. For $20 off a suitcase, visit awaytravel.com/fifth, that's F-I-F-T-H, and use promo code FIFTH, F-I-F-T-H, during checkout. So, Away Travel was started to create the perfect luggage. Their approach is simple: create special objects that are designed to be resilient, resourceful, and essential to the way you travel today. Away uses high-quality materials while offering a much lower price compared to other brands by cutting out the middleman and selling direct to you. Choose from 9 colors and 4 sizes: the carry-on, the bigger carry-on, the medium, or the large for extended stays. All suitcases are made with premium, lightweight German polycarbonate. Each piece has 4 360-degree spinner wheels. Carry-on sizes are compliant with all major airlines. TSA-approved combination lock built into the top of the bag to prevent theft. Removable, washable laundry bag keeps dirty clothes separate from clean. And both sizes of the carry-on are able to charge all cell phones, tablets, e-readers, and anything else that's powered by a USB cord. There is a lifetime warranty with these suitcases. If anything breaks, Away will fix it or replace it for you for life. 100-day live trial. If you get one, at any point you decide within those 100 days, you return it for a full refund. No questions asked. That's terrific. And free shipping on any Away order within the lower 48 states. So I traveled this week and I used my Away luggage for the first time and I thought it was fantastic. The separate compartments that it had for like harder items, like an additional pair of shoes and toiletries and my belt and the power cord and block for my laptop, all fit in very nicely. On the other side, I put my clothes. It was great because you don't have to sit there and like crush your clothes down by hand to kind of get the suitcase closed. It has this mesh top that you put over your clothes and then these straps that you kind of click and then you just pull down tight and it presses it down. And then it's very easy to go ahead and close the suitcase, zip it up, lock it up, and be ready for travel. The handle extends out to several different sizes, so it can people of different heights, it can accommodate them. I thought it was great. The wheels roll easily. It's lightweight, even though it's extremely durable. You know, you can tell these things can take a beating, and nothing's going to break it. So I loved it. I recommend it. I would think that everybody should want to get one of these. So here is a special offer to listeners of the show here. For $20 off a suitcase, visit awaytravel.com/fifth, that's F-I-F-T-H, and use promo code FIFTH, F-I-F-T-H, during checkout. One more time, that's awaytravel.com/fifth, and use promo code FIFTH, F-I-F-T-H, at checkout for $20 off any suitcase. All right, it is time for another episode of the Fifth Estate Podcast. We're back after taking a week off. I'm Jay Caruso. I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Neil Doing. How are you, sir?
Jay, my fine and excellent comrade. I am doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Hey, we were able to unplug for a week, rest a little bit. Now we're back. And,
yes.
As we're back now, you guys out there who are listening, we love you. We like that you like us, and you can show that even more by going to iTunes, leaving us a review or a star rating, a 5-star rating at that.
Yeah, the 5-star rating is what keeps us out in front of the rest of the pack. You know, the podcast world, it's a cutthroat industry, my friends, and we need every competitive advantage that we can muster. So your support is critical.
Yeah, so do that and then tell people to go ahead and, subscribe to the podcast. We love that as well. Subscribers are always good. Okay, Neil, you smoke,
Jay,
don't you?
Yeah, you know, from time to time, I am known to partake of the leaf. How about you? Do you smoke?
I smoked regularly up until I was about 30, and then I quit. I will still have one from time to time, but usually it requires a couple of drinks first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's always my downfall, too. You inject alcohol, and all the willpower goes right out the window.
Right. Well, we know people who smoke all the time.
Who what?
I said we know people who smoke all the time, so.
Well, sure. We sure do. I mean, people who are involved in the political world, I mean, you got to have something.
Something to look forward to. Something to give you pleasure.
That's right. And, you know, and there's some news in the world of tobacco. And I think it's pretty interesting. So we wanted to bring in a new guest, someone who hasn't been with us before, and talk to him about his recent adventures in the land of nicotine. And so we have our friend Dave Marcus, a senior contributor of The Federalist and the artistic director of Blue Box World. Dave, how are you?
I'm doing well. You know, you guys are my favorite kinds of smokers. You guys are why I bring two packs of cigarettes to a party, because there's two kinds of smokers. There's smokers and people who smoke my cigarettes.
Exactly. That's usually remember the old stuff from high school? What do you smoke? I smoke OPs.
Yeah.
Other people's cigarettes, for those who don't know.
No, that's fun.
That is lit. Yeah, we're a recognizable breed, you know, yes. But it makes you feel good. You feel like you're doing a service to humanity. And that's
I do.
So Dave, since you're new to the show, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, you know, how you got into writing and hey, when you started smoking?
Well, I guess I started smoking in high school, so probably around 16 or 17. I'd go down to the A+ near my school. At that time, people weren't very strict about your age. I remember being about 10 and buying cigarettes for my aunts and uncles in Fairmount in Philadelphia, and they just send us to the gas station. But so yeah, I smoked for a long time. Then I was in theater for a long time, where at the start of that, everybody smoked. By the mid-2000s, that was kind of frowned upon. And then about 2009, I started blogging, got on board with The Federalist kind of early, around 2013. And so started writing a little more seriously after that. And now I write a lot for The Federalist, sometimes for NRO, some other outlets. And yeah.
Okay. So Jay wanted to talk about something that's happening up in your neck of the woods. Now you are in New York City.
Yes.
And, you know, we have to distinguish. I know those people up there, you know, when you say New York, there's only one New York. But for us out here in the rest of America, we still distinguish between New York City and the rest of the state. But, so Jay, what the heck did you want to talk about here regarding New York City? And
well,
smoking?
I think if I'm not mistaken, and Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but they're proposing yet another cigarette tax in New York City.
Yeah, they are. It's actually a broader package than that, all of which is awful. It's straight out of de Blasio's office. So the tax component is, at this point, the base price of a pack in New York City is about $11.50, which is pretty close to the highest in the country. He wants to bump that up to $13.50, which I think would be the highest or very close to it in the country. You know, there's a whole host of reasons why this is a bad idea. One, it's obviously a regressive tax. Two, we already have a big problem with bootleg cigarettes. There's in every neighborhood in the city, you can go into bodegas and buy an $8 pack with a Virginia tax stamp. And the issue with that is sort of, you know, best case scenario, you're buying that from legitimate criminals like the mafia. Worst case scenario, you're buying that from terrorists. So, you know, clearly a black market's being encouraged with those kinds of usurious taxes. There's also just a level of moralizing. That, you know, clearly this is something that people look down upon, but that level of taxation is really just outrageous and not similar to any other product. And finally, there's no real good evidence that it works. When I looked into the numbers, in Denver, for example, the base price of a pack is $6. About 16% of people in Denver smoke. Here it's $11.50 and 14% smoke. So, you know, you've got twice the taxes and a 2% difference in the number of people who smoke. So It's really bad policy, but there aren't a lot of people who are willing to jump up and fight against it, because that just makes you look like you're pro-smoking, or, you know, it's an easy pinata to beat.
Right. Yeah, I know, as a Virginian, whenever I travel, I'm scandalized by the prices of a pack of cigarettes, you know.
Yeah.
We can get a pack of, you know, Camels down here for like $4.50. You know, Marlboros are a little more expensive. It's very reasonable, it seems to me. And you go to these other places, and it's like they just want to jack the price up so much. But it's like you said, people still buy them. It doesn't dissuade addicted people from buying these unhealthy products.
No, I mean, it doesn't. You know, maybe to some extent it does, but it's really marginal. And where this, you know, sort of all-consuming anti-pleasure bill from Bill de Blasio gets even worse is, you know, it has some aspects involving e-cigarettes, where, you know, there have been a lot of vape stores and stuff that have opened in New York City. And that's a way that a lot of people have succeeded in stopping smoking combustible cigarettes. And this, his legislation also has provisions that would limit the number of these shops that could open in different neighborhoods. And I mean, it's just a horrible idea, because the science is really very solid that these are less harmful products. And so standing in the way of that is again, really just a way of him moralizing, and not something that takes, you know, a public health crisis really into account as a serious thing to be dealt with.
And
go ahead, Jake.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. What about, So what I'm thinking is, you know, what about the idea? How come it doesn't get through to them that you know, this affects the poor more than, you know, they want to admit? I mean, that never enters into the equation.
I think it really does have to do a lot with this moral question. You know, I think in the 80s and 90s, when the tobacco companies were being revealed as these really horrible bad actors who were just lying blatantly to an unsuspecting public, they were considered to be the morally suspect ones. By the time you got to the mid to late 90s and into the 2000s, it was pretty obvious to everyone that smoking was bad for you, and that moral judgment got shifted away from the companies onto smokers themselves. And so I just think that, you know, as I mentioned in the piece, like nobody stops a fat person walking out of McDonald's and says, "Oh my God, how can you do this to yourself?" That happens to me when I walk down the street smoking a cigarette from just complete strangers. You know, there was a Twitter guy on the Fifth Estate feed today. He was like, "Why don't you just man up and quit?" You know, no, but that, I mean, that's the attitude, right? So there's just this sort of like, well, you know, screw you, like why don't you just quit? And that's clearly not been a successful answer for an awful lot of people who use nicotine.
And that's, you know, that leads us into your piece, actually, because you talk about that aspect of smoking, but it's in the context of this, I guess you would call it a junket that you just went on. And I'd like you to talk to us about this. You went to Europe and you attended some functions there that were put on by Big Tobacco. So why don't you tell us what you were doing over there and where you were?
It was a PR company that represents Philip Morris International. And they've been bringing journalists over to see a new factory that they have in Switzerland that's producing a product called IQOS. And it's a tobacco-based, it's not exactly vape, it does create a kind of aerosol. It's a technology called heat not burn. So the idea is that you're not lighting the tobacco on fire, you're just heating it to release the nicotine. And the notion is that this produces a lot less toxins. So they've been bringing journalists over there to tour the factory, talk to the scientists there. And then it so happened that the trip I went on coincided with the Global Forum on Nicotine in Warsaw, which is sort of a vape convention and deals with a lot of these issues. So we were there as well. Me and Billy McMorris from the Free Beacon.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, no, it was, I'll tell you, if you ever want to travel, though, as a conservative American in Europe, go with someone from the Free Beacon, because you end up looking you end up looking really good in comparison. But you know, it really was enlightening, and I was able to try the product, which is something that couldn't have happened in the U.S. because it doesn't have FDA approval yet. And it's an intriguing product. You know, I've tried e-cigs and stuff like that before, and this really did mimic much more closely what smoking an actual cigarette was like. So basically, you know, these guys, they're trying to get FDA approval, A, to sell the product in the country, and then they also want something called a modified risk tobacco product status, which means that they would be able to market the product as something that was lower risk than a combustible cigarette. So those are two different things that they're trying to get the FDA to approve. The former, I think, is much more likely than the latter. Only one company's ever tried to get that designation, the latter designation before, and they weren't able to do it. But we'll see. There's some compelling evidence, so we'll see what the FDA does.
Well, let's back up a little bit, Dave, and let's talk about, mm-hmm. you know, the people who are hosting you out there. It's like big tobacco. Like,
yeah.
As we've kind of, you know, all seen, they have a pretty dismal safety record. You know, their product kills people and causes cancer and birth defects and various other social ills. It goes so far as to making your clothes smell bad and making your wife mad at you after you come home from the bar. So, mm-hmm. you know, they've got a truly reprehensible product that people just can't seem to stop using. But that begs the question, like, why should we listen to them now? You know, on this matter, why should we listen to them?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that any of them say is exactly that. Look, there's no reason that you should trust us. Of course, you know, we have this horrible track record. Now, I mean, the people who were the executives back in the 80s and 90s when Aaron Brockovich was coming out, they're long gone. And these guys are really trying to rebrand, you know, right down to the facility in Switzerland, which is all made of glass, which is all completely clear inside and out. And the message is very clear. You know, we're trying to be transparent. The CEO of Philip Morris says he wants to get to a smoke-free future where everybody has switched over to this heat not burn or some alternative to combustible cigarettes. Now, yeah, in the meantime, they're still going to sell combustible cigarettes and people are going to buy them. I think the most compelling reason to give them a chance if you're the FDA is if you can get a product that has been successful in getting people away from more harmful combustible cigarettes to less harmful heat not burn cigarettes, you're still getting a net win off of that. And you know, that's to the advantage of people's health. So I think their message is don't trust us, you know, verify the information, test it, you know, do all this stuff. I think the two applications they put into the FDA are 2 million pages long. So, you know, I think that's the reason. I think if you want to attack this problem from a practical perspective, you're better off with more options than less options. And I think that's the argument that they're trying to make.
Okay, so... all right, so going forward, what – now it says here – did we talk – we didn't talk about Switzerland, right? What did you do in Switzerland?
That's where the factory is. The factory is in a little town in Switzerland.
All right, so let me ask you, because it's not – since it's not like a real cigarette, what does it feel like when you're smoking it? Do you feel like kind of like a dork or something like that?
No, it is kind of a real cigarette. It is what they do is they take the tobacco and they turn it into like a paper, and then that gets folded up really tightly and put into like a little cigarette with a filter that's about like an inch and a half long, and that you put into this electronic machine that heats it, and it creates kind of an aerosol vapor but with the nicotine from the actual tobacco. So that's how it differs from an e-cig. An e-cig has no tobacco. An e-cig, what they do is they put nicotine into a juice that goes into the e-cigarette, and that's what you vape. So this is actual tobacco, which is the difference. And yeah, I mean, it tasted more like a cigarette. There's a thing they call sort of like a throat hit that felt a little bit more like it. As I mentioned in the article, I was sort of able to blow rings with it. So what they're really trying to do is mimic the act of smoking a cigarette as closely as possible. And from my own experience, it did a pretty good job.
And now, does it mimic it in every way, though, Dave? I mean, one of the things about vaping that I think dissuades people from doing it is you look like a complete tool when you're doing it. You know, you're basically, instead of elegantly holding a cigarette cocked out at an angle or whatever, which you can gesticulate with and that sort of thing, you've got this device that you're basically sucking on like you're enjoying a Slurpee or a lollipop or something. Like
it looks like a miniature like clarinet.
it does. That's an issue for me. I do now. There is a second generation product that they're going to introduce that is that just looks like a cigarette that you can hold in two fingers the way that you hold the cigarette. And I'm kind of excited to see when that gets rolled out a little more, how that goes, because I think for me personally that would sort of suit my own needs a little more than the device does. But you know, when I spoke to the experts in smoking cessation, and when I spoke to the experts in the ways in which people get away from combustible cigarettes, what they all kind of said was that everybody's addiction is a little bit different. So for some people, if you've got a patch or the gum and you're getting the nicotine hit, you're good. You know, for some people that doesn't work, and the hand-to-mouth thing of the e-cigarette works. So there's all kinds of ways that the addiction works, and again, like the more options that people have, the more people you are going to have who move away from the combustible cigarette. And look, some people are going to stick with it, right? I mean, I don't know that this IQOS product would move me off of smoking regular cigarettes. I don't know.
Is it a successful product? I mean, have they tested it in any market?
Oh yeah, no. It's been the biggest test market is Japan, and in about a year they're at like 7.5% of the overall tobacco market in Japan, which doesn't sound like a lot, but for a product that was just introduced, that's a huge it's a huge number. And maybe more importantly, about 70% of the people who have tried to get off of combustible cigarettes onto this thing have succeeded in doing it completely. And it's interesting because you mentioned the smell, and that's actually one of the things when I was interviewing the marketing guys from PMI, that's one of the things that they really pushed in Japan, was that this isn't going to make you smell like tobacco. And apparently it doesn't. And in Japan's weird. Like in Japan, there's a lot of places where you can smoke inside, but you're not allowed to smoke outside. Sort of the opposite of the United States. But the product in Japan has been really successful. It's been successful in Europe. I saw people walking around Switzerland using it. So it's definitely had success.
Okay, so let's move on then to Warsaw and the Global Forum on Nicotine. So kind of set the scene for us and what this was all about.
It's a funny scene. I mean, you know, it's sort of like any corporate convention, but it wasn't the sexiest group of people, but it was sort of vape industry people, vape enthusiasts. They would all sort of stand outside with their various different machines, and some made lots of smoke and some made a little bit of smoke. And, they all had presentations that, you know, I think what comes through, I guess they've had this for several years, and really I think what the industry's been trying to show is that this is a less harmful alternative. And the independent research that was presented in all of these panels was really persuasive, you know, not just for heat not burn, which, you know, was shown to reduce toxins by more than 90%, but like all of these other options, whether it's snus or whether it's sort of different smokeless tobaccos. What I found interesting about it was Europe takes a very different attitude towards tobacco use and smoking. It's one that's sort of less puritanical. They don't have the same sort of moral outrage about it. So there was, I felt there more of an openness to the notion of like, these alternatives are something that people will enjoy. Whereas I think that's a tougher sell in the United States because there is still this sort of like, you know, man up, just quit attitude. But yeah, it was a strange scene. It was
I think you're absolutely right about Europe and America having different attitudes regarding smoking. You know, I've been over to Europe a few times, and you know, interacted with people, worked with people over there. And, you know, people smoke and it's not a big deal. And, you know, you go outside or you excuse yourself to go do it. And it's a social thing, just sort of like it is here. But, you know, there isn't this sort of like dirty looks as you take a smoke break. And when you're out at the bar, it's just sort of, you know, it's just something that you do, you know, and it's a level of enjoyment. It adds to the enjoyment of your evening. And you might not smoke, you might not buy a pack regularly, but you'll still pick up a cigarette and enjoy it, you know, if you're out on the town. And it's just the idea of it as a pleasure instead of a vice, you know, it's similar, I think, to it's a, like they say, everything in moderation, right? So circling back to the science, though, because this is what I think is the really key point about your piece. You know, we're talking about a 90% reduction in these toxins that are present in a, you know, cigarette 1.0, right?
Yeah.
And that research has been verified, duplicated.
There was one fairly dramatic panel where there was a representative from PMI who was on the panel, and there was a pretty respected scientist, this guy from Greece named Farsalinos, who had done a pretty exhaustive study of this heat not burn technology, and it basically mirrored what Philip Morris had found. And this is a guy, I mean, he's had some connection in the past to the e-cig industry. He has no connection to Philip Morris. I was pretty confident that this was very independent research, especially given the fact that the e-cig industry actually sort of has some reason for this heat not burn technology to not be as successful, because it's in some sense directly competing with them. But all of the independent research that's been done backs up the claims that Philip Morris has made. And I think, you know, their attitude is like, look, we'll provide you with the product. If you want to independently try to assess this, you know, go for it. I think that's what they're telling the FDA. And I think from their perspective and from my perspective, that's what they need to continue to do, is really just encourage independent research.
Right.
Because it's a high bar for them.
The key point of your piece was this tension between the puritanical mode, where only total abstinence from tobacco usage and nicotine is acceptable, versus this perspective, which, you know, Philip Morris and with their IQOS product and vaping and that sort of thing, this perspective of a reduction in harm, you know, if you accept that smoking is bad, which I think everyone does, and if you accept that it's better that people smoke less because of the bad things in cigarettes, which I think everyone does, then you must allow for avenues to reduce the potential for them to hurt themselves through smoking. And go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I mean, the one thing that just ran through my head with all of this was just, and I don't mean to sound like Barack Obama, but not making the perfect the enemy of the good. That, you know, if there are these options that are less harmful for people, you know, let them do it, because we know that the option that they're taking right now is not great. I think that's the message more than anything else, is just to not let the perfect abstinence be the enemy of the good, which is less combustible cigarettes.
I mean, and it's more realistic to say, okay, let's provide you an alternative, because I think you laid out in your piece there are something like a billion smokers worldwide.
Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, and the anticipation is that in 2025 there's still going to be a billion smokers. So yeah, it's that's a lot of people.
So yeah, so taking this blanket position of, you know, all tobacco is immoral and wrong, and we're going to expunge it from society, versus let's give people options, reduce the level of harm, and let's face it, you know, once America goes on a single payer health system, you're going to want people to be taking steps to reduce the level of harm that arises from their bad habits, right?
I would imagine so.
Yeah, yes. Know what I mean? Maybe, yeah. So I think it's a better, more realistic idea. But of course, I think the FDA is probably standing in the way, right?
I don't know. I mean, we'll see. You know, I do think that there's tension within government agencies. And like I said earlier, I think that tobacco is always a pretty easy, you know, whipping horse. But I would hope that the serious scientists at the FDA and other places in the government are taking a more serious look at this and, you know, trying to find out what's going to be the best for people. So, you know, I think there's hope that that's what's going on anyway.
But doesn't this also, I mean, is this big tobacco finally admitting what it's been said for the longest time, that cigarettes are really just a nicotine delivery system?
Yes.
Which is something they've kind of pushed back on for forever.
Yeah, no, it's pretty clear to me. In fact, in talking to the scientists, I mean, one of the things that they really were trying to mimic was how fast the nicotine gets into the system. So, you know, when you take a drag of a cigarette alternative, you want to mimic the nature of the nicotine hit. So, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that they're clear on that at this point.
So are, you know, with Philip Morris and the other, you know, other big tobacco groups, does Altria own Philip Morris?
They're sister companies.
Sister companies.
Yeah, they had been one company, and, you know, Altria operates within the United States. Philip Morris operates outside of the United States. So Philip Morris International operates outside of the United States. So that's why they're able to have, you know, this product in Japan and in Switzerland and Europe. And Altria, although Philip Morris International is the company that's applying for the status from the FDA, it would be Altria that actually provided the products.
Interesting. Yeah. So, well, you know, are they optimistic about their chances to get this on the market? Are they optimistic about, you know, the future?
I think they're optimistic about getting it on the market. Yeah. I think that they probably have fairly good reason to be. I'm not sure how optimistic they are about getting the modified status, especially since nobody's ever gotten it before. But yeah, I think they clearly view this as the future of their industry. It's very clear just visiting this facility, how much money they've dumped into it, how much they want to change and rebrand the nature of their industry. They really kind of see themselves as a tech industry now. And so when you walk into this place, it feels like you're walking into Google. It's got that kind of campus feel with the little, you know, coffee areas. I didn't see any foosball tables, but, you know, it's got that kind of feel to it. And I think that's what they want to be going forward. So I do sense they're optimistic.
Are you optimistic? Do you think they'll do it?
Yeah, I am. Look, I think people are always going to smoke tobacco. I think that, you know, there's a lot of things that people are always going to do. But, you know, I feel it. I'm you know, I turned 42 years ago or whatever. Like, I think about these issues. And so as these products come onto the market, it's intriguing to me to think about trying to move to something that's less harmful. So yeah, I'm optimistic that this is gonna be a net positive in the world.
So Dave, so what do you smoke? Let the audience know what you're.
I often roll my own, in which case I smoke Samson, which I think is by far the best rolling tobacco. It's like a blue pouch with a lion on it. It's really quite good. When I buy you know, pre-rolled filter cigarettes, I smoke Marlboro Lights.
What's the best cigarette you ever had? Is there anything that's really good that you just like, hey, this is just too expensive, I wish I could afford it, but
no, not really. I mean, like, you know, I sometimes if I'm going to like some kind of fancy thing or whatever, I'll get the like black and gold Nat Sherman's, but like on a, like, that's really just for looks. I mean, I wouldn't want to smoke those on a regular basis. It's kind of too much. American Spirits, I find really overbearing. Like, it takes a half an hour to smoke it, and you're just like, what am I doing here?
No, seriously, it does. It takes 15 minutes to smoke a cigarette, and they go out. you know.
Right. You're relighting it five times
it's
and it
ridiculous.
Goes out. It's not good.
But I'll tell you, Dave, yeah, you know, my my plan to quit smoking was actually to start buying Nash Shermans and smoking those exclusively. And I did that mm-hmm. for a while. It didn't work. Spoiler mm-hmm. alert. I just got really comfortable paying for them. You know, and actually, even in Virginia, you know, they're about $10 a pack for Nat Sherman's,
right.
which
right.
when you're talking about a pack of Marlboro Lights being $11.50 in New York, possibly going up to $13, I can only imagine what Nat Sherman's cost up there.
It's actually closer because so much of the price difference is tax and not the difference in the product price.
Mm, I see.
You're really only paying like a dollar or two more for Dunhill's or Nat Sherman's. So that's kind of an interesting impact of these taxes. Whereas it sounds like you're paying almost twice as much.
So you really have no excuse to smoke, you know, swept up sawdust when you're in
almost.
New York City.
Almost. That's
you know
right,
what I mean?
Yes.
Like you may as well spring for the extra quality and go to flavor country.
That's right.
So fascinating.
No Killer Cools for you, Dave?
What's that?
Killer Cools, no Killer Cools or
I don't care for menthols. I never have. I don't understand why anybody likes it. I really dislike menthols an awful lot.
I think the marketing was supposed to be it leaves your breath fresher.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that
which
works.
I think is directly untrue.
I think Newport filters were made of fiberglass.
Yeah,
because
no, I mean
people would get sick
like
after smoking those, you'd be hacking up phlegm for like 4 months.
No, to me, it's like if I accidentally breathe in a Tic Tac. It's bad. It's just I find nothing enjoy. If in fact the best plan for me to quit smoking would probably be if the tobacco industry went completely menthol, I think I'd be out.
Now, what about like other forms of smoking, like pipes and cigars? Are you into that or no?
I tried when I was like 24. I thought like, I'll smoke a pipe. And it was kind of fun for like a couple of days. There's a lot that goes into a pipe. You got to have like cleaners and mm-hmm. a pouch and all kinds of rigmarole. So
it's
no, I'm not. I don't like cigars.
I smoked a pipe in college because I was that guy.
Yeah.
Sure.
And yeah, surprising no one. but it is. It's a lot of work and it smells great. It smells
sure.
a lot better than cigars. It smells a lot better than cigarettes. But
yeah.
It is a lot of work. And you get made fun of in bars when you pull your pipe out.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. I was talking about this with somebody the other day. It's like, this is something the tobacco industry, if they did this, they'd make a ton of money. If they could do something that could replicate what it's like when you first light a cigarette with a match, not even so much with a lighter, even with a match, that first drag of a cigarette. If they could do that, if they could market that and sell that product, they'd make so much money because that's like
the
greatest thing.
The IQOS is a little bit like that.
Oh, okay.
It actually is. It feels a little bit like that. And this new product that they haven't like launched yet, I think you actually, I wasn't entirely clear on it, but I think you actually do, you actually can use fire to light it. Although again, it doesn't combust. It that just sort of activates heat. But yeah, it really is all about like mimicking the experience. It's funny. I hadn't thought of it till tonight, like prepping for this, but I'm reminded of like everyone who's trying to like mimic meat, you know, like you don't need hamburgers. We're going to create this thing that tastes just like it.
We're going to grow it in the lab.
Yeah. I think we will reach a point where you're going to have to go to some kind of like special place to have actual meat. And you're probably going to be looked down upon for doing it. Because it's so much greener and it's so much healthier and so much better to have like the fake meat.
Ugh.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm sure it's coming.
Gross.
But
I'm sure society will collapse before that happens.
Maybe.
But maybe. So to all our listeners out there, definitely recommend you go visit the Federalist and read David Marcus's latest piece. Its title is Seeking Redemption. Big Tobacco says new products eliminate 90% of smoking toxins. And it's a really fascinating subject. So I encourage everybody to go read that.
You're going to say something else, Neil?
Well, yeah. Anyway, Dave, what else you got coming up, man? Anything interesting? Any more European jaunts? Or are they going to send you to South America or something? What are they doing?
No, I don't think so. I got a couple things in the fire. I'm starting to get a little excited about New York City mayor's race, and I have some things that I'm thinking about writing about that in the near future. I really like, it looks like the GOP nominee is going to be this woman, Nicole Malliotakis, who I think is very good for the Republican Party in New York City. So looking forward to writing about that, kind of finding anything that's not Trump that I can write about and, keep the articles coming.
There you go. Awesome. There you go. Yeah. All right. Well, before we let you go, we have one final piece of business to take care of.
Okay.
Mr. David Marcus. It's a gotcha question. It's something that we spring on all our guests. I don't want you to be afraid. I don't want you to be nervous. Okay. Mm-hmm. No matter how you answer, Jay and I will still love you the same. Okay. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it. But that question is this. David Marcus, which is better, the Beatles or the Rolling Stones?
Oh God, I'm really not a fan of either. I dislike both.
You must make a decision.
I'll go with the Beatles. I'll go with the Beatles just because I think that they're more iconic. I really dislike both. I really like under no circumstances would I listen to either. But for purposes of better and worse, better or worse, I guess the Beatles were first, so maybe them. And my son likes the Beatles. My 7-year-old son loves Yellow Submarine. He watches it constantly.
Well, that's a good metric for choosing.
Yeah.
Even though you did answer very poorly from my perspective.
It gives me another win.
Disappointed me greatly.
I'm sorry.
I won't take back any of the nice things I said about you or your
art. Appreciate it.
And sincerely, though, thank you for coming on.
That's a pleasure. What a great show.
Yeah, we appreciate it, Dave. Thank you very much.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
And
next
time I see you, Dave, I'll be sure to bum a cigarette for me.
Definitely.
Excellent.
After a couple of drinks.
All right. You guys have a good one.
All right, Dave. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Dave Marcus, everybody, from The Federalist. That was an interesting episode, Neil.
Yeah. Something a little different. Yep. Get out of the Trump lane. Get out of the politics daily grind.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about smoking.
Yeah. Smooth, flavorful relaxation.
I you know what I miss? And I see this every once in a while, just very quickly, what I miss when I go through like antique stores and stuff. You see old Life magazines or Rolling Stones. I love the old cigarette ads.
Oh, the ads are great.
They're so great. Right. They always, and it's amazing because they always make guys like the coolest people on earth and they're sitting holding like, a big Winston.
Look, Jay, I don't want to alarm you, but people who smoke are the coolest people on earth.
Hey, everybody always, what was it Woody Allen said? He goes, I'd never inhale. He goes, I just look so handsome with a cigarette in my hand.
Which is a very strange cultural phenomenon that I think could probably be worth its own entire show. It's like, how do we get to a point where holding a piece of rolled up burning leaf became a sign of sophistication?
Of course.
But we're out of time.
Yes, we are. We'll have to cover that in another episode. All right. So, everyone, for Neil Dewing, I'm Jay Caruso. We will see you next time here on The Fifth Estate.